Hello and welcome to the Bot Nirvana podcast, where we dive into all things software automation. I'm your host, Nandan Mullakra. While I'm not podcasting, I write articles on nandan.info. I hope you enjoy the show. Let's get right into it.
On today's podcast, we have Pankaj Chaudhary. He's the founder and CEO of Fortress IQ. Fortress IQ is a process intelligence company. They're building a platform that can continuously monitor your processes and provide insights for optimization, automation, security, governance, and more, so that you can digitally transform at scale. In this chat, we discuss about the evolution of Fortress IQ, their vision for process intelligence, and how it's different from other players in the industry. I enjoyed having this chat and hope you enjoy listening as well.
Hi, Pankaj. Thanks and welcome to the Bot Nirvana podcast. Thanks for taking time to be with us today. So, read about Fortress IQ and it's got a great history. You've gone from being in a stealth mode to going to beta to a release. So, can you tell us a bit about your history, about how you started with Fortress IQ?
Yeah. Thanks for having me on. You know, over 3 years ago, when we were founding Fortress IQ, I was trying to solve this problem of how to help organizations transform at scale. And, you know, where that problem came from, you know, before that, I'd sold a company to Genpact, and I had seen kind of firsthand what transformation teams would encounter as they tried to really not just take one process and transform it, which by the way is still hard, but how do you actually take that and do that at scale across an entire global organization? And you know, I looked at how are we able to basically transform the web so quickly, right? Digital experiences on the web had gone from zero to being best in class, you know, in you know a very, very short period of time. You know, we're talking a decade, you know, around that. And if you look back at the history of the internet, one of the things that happened very early on, and Google, of course, was prescient in this. Google acquired a little company called Urchin. And Urchin became Google Analytics. There was another company out there, Omniture, which got acquired by Adobe. And these guys were providing extremely detailed analytics on how people were using websites. And that enabled us to really improve and go data-driven in how we actually improve these websites. That was a transformation, right? It was a revelation. You know, everything from Amazon and the way that they would personalize the homepage to, you know, famously Google testing the font size on the homepage for engagement. We never really got that whole sea change in the enterprise. And it skipped us for you know, some very good reasons. On the web, doing that is a lot easier. It's actually, again, still hard, but you know, you've got a session identifier. You're usually doing it on one website. So you can kind of contain that information. In the enterprise, you know, you've got a transaction. If you think of invoice, expense report, it goes across multiple users, multiple systems, multiple companies, right? How do you actually track something across all of that different kind of, you know, crazy systems? And so trying to solve that problem was the first thing that we had to address. So if you look at, you know, traditional kind of analytics companies, of which there obviously are a lot of great ones, we actually had to start even earlier than that. We had to create the data so that we could analyze it. And this is something that was really only really available recently because of the breakthroughs in computer vision. And so early on, we decided that, okay, you know what, if we want to get the data at the breadth and depth that we want, we're gonna have to make sure that we don't have to integrate with every system, right? Because that'll just take too long, it'll be too much effort, which pushed us down the computer vision path. And then taking that and saying, okay, now that obviously introduces a whole other set of problems. So that's why, you know, we basically worked on our product for close to 2 years before we even released it. So the, you know, it's just kind of working on computer vision models on everything. And then once we got it out of stealth, you know, the feedback from organizations was really exciting, because it our approach really enabled organizations to get around, to skip some of the biggest challenges in deploying new technologies. Is it compatible with my old stuff? How do I integrate it? We don't have those challenges. So it kind of got us to where we are today.
Okay, very good. And that's an interesting journey in terms of seeing what's happening on the consumer internet and, you know, mapping it to what has to happen in enterprises. So this evolution of yours, you know, I've been tracking your evolution on the internet, and I see that you actually started in 2017 when you even, I think you were in the stealth mm-hmm. mode. Your mm-hmm. whole idea was to fix the robots running amok. And that was mm-hmm. really interesting to see. And then yep. I think by the time you came out of stealth, I mean, I think that was around the time HFS came out with that article on 2019-ish, I think, when they said RPA mm-hmm. is dead. So what did you think about it as you went from stealth to release? Was it, you know, you were building something which is supporting bots at that point, mm-hmm. and how did it look like at that point?
I think the challenge that we were seeing, and this is again in 2019, is we wanted to build technology that could track a process, right? Could right. track the execution of a process. And one of the things, you know, again, based on my experience, was that, look, the world is going to be using bots in an increasing manner. And so we're going to need to be able to track those bots. What I didn't understand is people needed to track the process, irrespective of who was executing it, right? Whether it's a bot or a person. Right. And the transition to getting to that bot was actually one of the biggest problems that people were encountering. I kind of made the early bet of, you know, when I was out pitching VCs, I always like to break it down to what things have to be right for us to win, right? And so the idea that, you know, people are going to use bots, right? Bots are going to get better. You know, these are the things that are there. And, you know, and one other one is people will not want to get all their bots from one company, right? So those are kind of the things that I was thinking. These are the characteristics of the market that I see evolving. What I had not anticipated is how hard it was for people to really get to the bot, to figure out what can be done by a bot, what needs to stay with the person. And so where we originally started saying, hey, you know, people are deploying bots like crazy, let's help people to manage those bots. What we found is people needed as much help kind of on that journey of getting to the bot. And so that's where kind of the additional use cases of, hey, let's look at it this way and that way. And we've actually learned even more now as people are getting more familiar with our data, they're finding a whole other set of use cases that we had never envisioned, you know, for our technology.
Okay, wow. So you've evolved as you saw what you're seeing in the market, right? From bots mm-hmm. to more than bots. So it looks like you're continuing the evolution of, you know, what Gartner calls as hyperautomation. Mm-hmm. So do you see that trend with process mining too, which is enlarging the scope or
the process? Yeah. If you look at kind of what we did with our process intelligence launch, so we launched a new kind of foundation platform based on stuff that we had heard from customers. And I would say it actually all has to deal with scale. And the things that we heard from customers, and I'll use one very, very simple example, is today, any sort of process work, and so you can call it process mining, task mining, you know, whatever you want, is done in a very episodic manner, right? It's almost like a consulting project. Let's look at this thing, and let's then go look at something else, and let's go look at something else. And I think that approach, while appropriate when the technology was much more difficult to implement and understand and use, needs to change. And that change is forcing some of the scale issues that need to be addressed in both the technology and in the industry. But I'll again use an example. If you were to be worried about viruses on your computer, mm-hmm. you wouldn't deploy antivirus for a week and then go away for 6 months, right? You'd say, no, I need to have antivirus on all the time because my computer is constantly changing, constantly installing software, communicating with people, emails, this, that, the other. I need to have AV running all the time. If you were to put analytics on your website, you don't put analytics on your website for a week and then turn it off saying, I know how people use my website. You're constantly changing your website. So process within an organization is something that's constantly changing. You're rolling out new products. Customers want to interact with you differently. You might change something. You know, if you change a option on a self-service thing that kicks people into a manual workflow, seeing how those two interact is something that could happen on a monthly basis, right? It's all the time. So the idea of having episodic process information, I think, is going to seem crazy to us in another 1 or 2 years. That this is going to be core data to the way that we run businesses, and it needs to be on all the time. And it's going to be happening in a bunch of different ways. If you think about the amount of time that we spend in applications, if I can figure out how to help you use an application, right? So the idea that we're saying, hey, you just requested through the enterprise catalog to get XYZ application deployed on your computer. Let's see how you use it, and let's kind of give you targeted training interventions, right? That's something that you need to be integrated with the HR system, with the ITSM system, and with the training system in order to do well. And that's kind of where we see the process world evolving to, that everything we do is a process, right? Processes are our DNA. And so that we need to be kind of really taking a look at those and seeing how can we help people to improve them in a continuous improvement type manner.
Wow. So I think that's a great insight that you gave. Yesterday we were having a discussion on process mining, and the question people had was, when do I apply process mining? And where do I apply process mining? And it's all, like you say, episodic. I think you said that.
Episodic. Here and then here.
And even some of the other players, they say it's an X-ray into the process. So it looks like it's at this point, I take an X-ray and show you. But this is very important that process is not static. It's continuously evolving and changing. And interestingly, I told them it has to be throughout. And I didn't actually think of this, but this is very interesting that, the process has to be always be monitored, and then it's giving inputs to improve and continuously improve. That's an amazing thing.
It's actually crazy that we think about it in any way other than that. Can you name another thing that you monitor in an episodic way, right? The entire world, if you think about the quantified self, if you think about kind of any sort of healthcare medical monitoring, the best in class is you can do it all the time. Glucose monitoring, we now have there's this whole new quantified health where people are monitoring their blood levels constantly. Your Apple Watch, the idea that all of this data should be constant. And it's actually, when you look at the healthcare side of the world, it's one of the interesting things is we have a generation that is going to have a baseline of their health that is going to enable them to make better decisions, 30 years and 40 years later, because they're going to know exactly how their body operated when they were 15 years old, right? When we were at our peak, right? We don't have that baseline. If you say, okay, I want to go back to my baseline, we never recorded it, right? Yeah. And so again, the idea that we would say, oh, let's look at a process for 1 week out of a year is, I don't know, again, it's just silly. It's better than nothing, don't get me wrong, but we know where everyone wants to go.
Yeah, and that's very interesting. And I think I have a theory for that, because in the consumer world, it's been always been like that. Like you said, we always keep monitoring, like going back to your example of Google, we always monitor the analytics, right? But in enterprise world, everything is silo based, we like to silo things, we like to have a department for HR, we like to have a department for IT, and it's all siloed. And so we are always thinking in terms of how to decrease the complexity. And so people, I think so that we are thinking like in terms of, let's take an X-ray of this spot, right? I think like what you say, that's a good start, but I like the way you're going. And, so that brings me to your whole process intelligence. So now I actually understand what process intelligence is. And so I just wanted to, talk about that a bit more in terms of, because just from an, from this from people, from hearing from people, there's a lot of confusion out there, right? I mean, there is, and especially this being an evolving and very promising field, many multiple players and many have different terms they want to position against. So there is that, you know, I would say the earlier thing of process mining, which is more of logs and event logs and databases. And then there is this process desktop mining, which is now, you know, looking at the screens and, you know, and you are talking of a whole different thing called process intelligence. But the thing is that how do we educate people? I mean, how do we come to something where we all can agree on? Have you thought about that?
Yeah, it's one of the interesting things. And it's, you know, I think one of the reasons that we've stayed away from the, you know, a lot of the academic views of process mining, right? So there's phenomenal, beautiful work going on in the academic world around process mining, right? So, some, I mean, really cutting edge stuff. But that's, you know, like saying, you know, the work going on in convolutional neural networks is awesome, but no one cares about it. They want better, you know, autofocus on their phone, right? Whether it comes from a convolutional neural network, they don't care. I would actually argue that people don't care about processes either. They care about outcomes, right? And the process is how they get there. And I think the industry has focused on this. Well, let me help you with your process. Let me help you with your process. And people keep saying, okay, so I've got this process, but now how do I get to a better, you know, DSO or something? There's got to be a business objective that's attached to it. And going even one step further, making it very human-based, right? The idea that processes, you know, I think process mining got tangled in with RPA and automation early on. And it was good because it helped propel us and the growth and everything. But one of the things that we've seen and people see with our data is the opportunity to improve your processes outside of automation is probably 10x what it is inside of automation. And you can't do one without the other, right? So I think the idea that automation is one component of your overall transformation, and we need to make sure that you know, we are explaining to people that this is just another way of getting very, very good data to help you make better decisions. And so, you know, it's why when I say, you know, process mining, task mining, desktop mining, no one cares about any of that. They're like, is it easy for me to get the data to make a better decision? And that's kind of that line that we need to help our customers with.
Okay. And that's very interesting, because once you start talking about a continuous improvement and not just one X-ray, I think, you know, yeah, you go past all the terms, right? You're basically in business objectives, not into, you know, giving them something so that they can use it into some other automation or something else. It's basically about improving the business outcome. So I like
that. Yeah. Well, I think it's, again, the idea that process intelligence, when we say it can't be episodic, that's kind of the first, you know, kind of thing that we, when we took a step back and said, okay, what do customers want from us? The one was, you know, it can't be episodic, but another one is it can't be siloed. Right? Your process doesn't exist in a silo. It exists with people, it exists with systems, it exists with your partners, with your customers. Right. And so, you know, the idea of how do we use process intelligence in security and compliance, right? Mm-hmm. So should Splunk be able to send a notification to say, hey, we need to observe this process because we're seeing security anomalies in it. Let's take a look at this and then be able to send that whole thing to another process analyst that says, oh, wait a second, A, B, and C are happening. That isn't process mining. It's not SecOps. It might be human level, you know, issues that are causing it. But when you bring that together, it's magical, right? Because you solved the problem for your customer and saved them from a security breach or a, you know, a regulatory fine. Those are the kinds of things that people are looking for.
Yeah, and I was reading yesterday about how, you know, security can be, you know, process discovery or whatever you call it, but process intelligence can help a lot with security, right? And security is one of the biggest problems right now. And if you can understand the trends ahead and prove solve that problem, that's a huge win, right? Just one small area.
Yeah, no, that's definitely what we're seeing.
Okay, cool, cool. So I just wanted to switch tracks in terms of overall thing now. Yeah, I know automation is a small part of it. And if you look at the whole industry, like I said earlier, you know, the whole trend towards more than RPA, more than, actually it should be more than automation too, right? And if you look at, I mean, the new trends now, Microsoft in the automation space is coming up a lot. And then they are your partner and seeing you partner with them early, which is great. And so, you know, Microsoft is bringing in a complete suite. And I, as I see it, it's a complete productivity suite, you know, which includes your Microsoft 365, Dynamics 365, the new Power Platform with the low code that they're introducing. And now they've made RPA free for Windows. I mean, so, you know, you see the whole thing is going to a level where it's accessible to everyone. You know, I think that whole silo, breaking the silos, not within the enterprise, but I think within the, you know, between the whole work and personal space is probably coming down. So and so from what you are seeing, you know, how do you see these things evolving in terms of you know, people doing the work better, right? I mean, I think that that's the end of the day, that's what it is. I mean, if you go even beyond enterprises, right, how people can do their work better and you can help them do it. So are you excited about it? How do you see it?
Phenomenally excited about it. I think there's a couple of trends that are really interesting there. And, you know, I think, you know, Automation Anywhere was talking about be better, right? That was their tagline. You know, Microsoft has talked about empowering the digital workforce. There's a couple of trends that I think are really interesting, and they come down to, in its simplest form, competition. And competition makes us better. You know, the idea that if there is only one option, there's just this regression to the mean, right? It's the lowest common denominator. And we've seen that across every industry, right? When there's no competition, it stagnates. And so the first level of competition that we saw was SaaS kind of versus on-prem, right? And SaaS made enterprise IT better, right? You had to provide service at the same level of the SaaS companies, or I'm going to go around you, and that we had shadow IT for a long time, and I'm going to get the service I need, and I don't need to go through you to do it. That made the enterprise better. The next thing that we saw that actually even impacted the SaaS companies was the consumerization of the enterprise. Why is it so easy for me to use email and this and that, and your stuff is crap? You need to make your stuff better to use, right? And so the consumerization of the enterprise forced us all to become better. We had to make better applications. Now, the next thing that's happening is citizen developers, right? The idea that, look, if you can't give me what I need, if you're going to make my job hard to do, I got this bot and I'm going to do it myself. And it makes everyone better. And so the idea that all of these trends are saying, look, there's going to be constant tension. And then tension is a good thing. And again, for competition and for innovation, to say, we are going to be constantly making, you know, kind of low code development easier. Well, that means we have to make APIs more open also, right? If we want to compete with that. And, you know, so we are going to have a maniacal focus on the end user and making their lives better. Because if we don't, there's going to be a very, very easy way for them to do it themselves. And that kind of reduces the value of what, you know, you're doing, what I'm doing. And eventually when they don't need it anymore, we go away, right? That's you go the way of the dodo bird. So it just keeps us kind of upping our game. And I think that's one of the things Microsoft has been brilliant at, right? Microsoft looks at this very much as a low code play. And I remember back in, you know, when they launched, not even with the Softmotive acquisition, with you know, they had launched Flow, and there was a lot of, you know, the chattering heads, us, you know, talking about, oh, Microsoft low code, they don't know this, they don't know that. And I made this, you know, a comment on LinkedIn or something about Excel. Excel is easily the largest no-code platform in the world. And, you know, again, I don't know how much you know about the team that they have over there working on their RPA stuff, but the head product manager is the XPM from Excel. they know this stuff inside and out. They brought him over, and I think it's going to be fascinating what they do, because if when you say it out loud, if I had to go to my IT group to get them to write a macro for me, like, what would that world look like? You know, what would we still be working with? You know, we're going to get the same thing. And then the idea that Microsoft is going to be the one that pushed it that way, I would never bet against them.
Because I actually shared some time back, you know, I said the future of low code is probably the humble spreadsheet, because that's the interface that the business people know. And so that's why Microsoft PowerFX, which is their low code platform, is built around spreadsheet ideas. And now you say the person behind all that is from spreadsheet, from Excel. Even Amazon introduced Honey, I think. Honey Code, which is basically spreadsheet based.
But even if you look at like Google acquired AppSheet, so their low code is basically based on the Excel or spreadsheet paradigm. Right. You know, one of the most successful startups out there right now is Airtable, which is doing the same thing. I mean, they've got a multi-billion dollar valuation. It's got to be easy for the user, and anytime, and it's one of those renaissances that has come about is kind of in UI and UX that, you know, just doing the same exact thing with a better UI is actually a $1 billion company. You know, it's I laugh, my one of my best friends, and this is a funny story. We were down on vacation together, and we were hanging out, and he told me about his new company he was starting, and he was going to build an email client. And so I look at him, my friend Javier. I say, Javier, you're going to build what the three largest companies give away for free, right? That's your business model. And he's like, yeah. And because, you know, at that point, Apple, you know, Google, everyone gave away email for free. He's like, and I'm like, okay, so what's going to be different? He's like, we're going to do it better. And I said, okay. About a year and a half later, Microsoft acquired the company for $250 million because he did it better. He literally, Microsoft with Outlook inventing email, you know, kind of all that sort of stuff. He built a better email client. And now that became kind of Outlook Mobile. He went on to now he actually leads a workplace for Google, kind of, you know, trying to make all of their stuff better. But the idea of just taking a simple idea, doing it better with a better UI, better UX, and a focus on the customer, it's revolutionary. But think about it, the opportunity is still out there in email, right? It's still there.
Yeah. And all ideas are new ideas or old ideas, right? Like I was looking at this history of spreadsheet when I was sharing that, you know, spreadsheet goes back to the Egyptian civilization, you know, where they were actually having tables where they would record this tally mark. So
absolutely.
It's the same.
Back to the abacus.
Going like this. Yeah, very good. Very good. And I think, you know, it all goes back to, you know, we moving to data first, right? I mean, that's kind of where we are going. And that's what Microsoft is enabling. If you look at Microsoft's Dataverse and they're building CDM, Common Data Model, and they just flip the script, you know, it's basically, here is all the data you've been collecting, you know, and we've been collecting it at the back end. And then now here is a way to go past IT and just build it out, use Power BI analytics, or whether it is Power Automate or, you know, Power Virtual Agent. Yeah. All those things are basically helping with the data, right? So
well, I think it's
data first evolving.
It's, I think it's going to change the world. and the, you know, I look at us as that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to create a new category of data, right? That's this process intelligence. But let me give you an example of, you know, kind of the way that I think this is going to evolve. If you think about the society that we live in, and this is getting a little, you know, kind of existential in this sense, the society that we live in is one where oftentimes the squeaky wheel gets the oil, right? And I talk about this when I'm talking with customers and about transformation. Transformation is usually who yells the loudest. I have the biggest problem. I have the this, I have the that, right? And squeaky wheel getting the oil. Now, the problem is that the person who yells the loudest is not necessarily the person who needs it the most, that can have the most impact, that can do all these other things. And so when you take a look at how kind of we got here and how this manifests itself within organizations, you know, you have underrepresented communities that can be sitting in a meeting and can't advocate for themselves or for the best thing for the company because they don't yell, right? And look, it's just, you don't yell. You weren't taught to yell, you weren't boastful, you weren't this. What if it wasn't who yelled the loudest, but who had the data? Right. The idea that you have, you know, if you think of, you know, most organizations run, you know, transformation and everything as a portfolio, right? Where am I going to get the best ROI, the best bang for the buck? And someone over here yelling the loudest isn't necessarily where you're going to be able to move NPS scores the most or have the most impact on your customer. So we, by giving people data, we empower a whole new set of really kind of decisions to be made, not based on hunches on this budget, but really where can the impact be made? And that's what I find really, really exciting because it flips the script, right? It's not just about, you know, kind of going in there and pounding the table and advocating for your idea. It's nope, here's the data and here's why it's right. And that's what we're trying to enable.
Yeah, and the new kind of data, like you said, in terms of, you know, what the processes are about. So that's right. So in terms of moving, you know, looking ahead, so you did talk about it a bit, but how do you see Fortress IQ's process intelligence evolving in terms of continuous improvement? But, you know, what type of features do you plan to add? And, you know, if you can share with us anything exciting?
Yeah, you know, I think the you know, when we take a look at what customers want from our data, we often talk about kind of there's five outcomes that people get to when they look at our data. The first is what we call fix the person, right? That by looking at the data, they're like, you know what, if I would actually just train people in like a different way, I'd be able to get a great business outcome. And so the idea of how can we impact employee experience, employee training? So you're gonna see a lot of features kind of around that. The second we call fix the system. I have existing technology. If I would configure that technology to support the workflows that people want or enforce the workflows that I want, I'd get a great business benefit from it. Mm-hmm. So it's how to, you know, kind of take your existing tech and configure it or you know, migrate it to something that's better, fix the system. So you'll see, you know, one of the things that we're doing is, for specific applications, you're going to see a module that can help you to migrate off of one platform and onto that platform. So let's map the processes in your existing legacy system and help you move over to Salesforce or help you move over to ServiceNow, that sort of thing. The third is fix the process, right? We need to re-engineer. And so you'll see features around re-engineering that'll be out there. The fourth is, why are we doing this at all? We should either eliminate it or outsource. It's not core to our business. So you know, kind of features and functionality around centralization. And then the fifth is automation. And automation is one that's across multiple modes of kind of, you know, data extraction. So kind of intelligent document processing and how can we help over there? RPA, but API also. The idea of how can we help you to see where can automation benefit and what type of automation should you be using there? And we're looking at, you know, kind of releasing features across kind of all of those to help our customers.
Wow. That's a great vision. And, you know, you spoke about people, process, technology, strategy, and automation. And automation is in that level right now. Yeah. Oh, that's amazing. So, but that's very exciting. I mean, you know, after talking to you, I realized the whole breadth of thing. And, you know, actually what you're talking about is how to do digital transformation, right? And yeah, it's all been in silos, you know, it's always about let's do DevOps or let us do Agile, you know, or let's do cloud or let's do automation. It's all in, again, like we spoke about earlier, it's all silos. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, very well framed like a box. I don't know if you follow Venkatesh Rao. You know, he has written well about it, you know, the how we actually have all these things in neat little boxes. And you know, so the enterprise is opening up now, and that's good to know. And it's great that you're enabling that. I mean, and I see that you have a great vision to the future. So that's That's amazing. I think so. You know, supposing if people want to start with this awesome Fortress IQ platform, you know, how do you how do you advise people to get started with it?
So you know, we have we have our partners, we have our own organization that can help you to pilot the software oftentimes to see kind of, you know, is it right for you? A lot of times there's work to be done before, you know, getting to us. But you know, it's very, very easy to pilot our software, right? Because again, that zero integration, you know, kind of universal compatibility. So it's I'd say to kind of get started with this, reach out to either one of your partners that's one of ours, or reach out to us directly, and we can get a pilot going for you usually within a couple of weeks.
Okay. So just so that you know, is there a way you're considering where people can download a bit of it and try it out, or that's not in the?
So yes and no. I think you'll see that we're trying to make our software easier and easier to engage with. Okay. One of the things that we talk about is kind of the responsibility that we have to make sure that our software isn't used in manners that we don't approve of, right? The idea that we've built technology that can track at a scale that was previously unavailable. And we have a responsibility to make sure that technology doesn't just get out into the wild, because you could do some very bad things with it. So that's why you don't see just, hey, download our software and do this. We need to figure out how to make sure that all the controls are around that everyone, you know, knows that the software is installed, that the process is being monitored, you know, staying away from any sort of nefarious big brother type things. And then we're very, you know, we take that responsibility very, very seriously. So we always, you know, we never go around IT. We're going through them and with them and as partners in this. So I think that's one of the things that we're struggling with.
Okay. Yeah, understood. And, you know, AI can be powerful, but yeah, can be double-edged, right? So got to be careful. All right. Okay. So that was a great conversation, Pankaj. So if people need to contact you or find you, what's the best way to reach?
Email Pankaj@fortressiq.com. That's me.
Okay. Thank you so much, Pankaj, for taking time today. That was an awesome conversation. I hope people find it great too. Thank you. Thanks.
Thanks a lot. Really enjoyed it.
Thank you for joining the Bot Nirvana podcast. Appreciate if you can leave a review on iTunes or Stitcher. Catch the show notes on botnirvana.org. While you're there, feel free to explore more automation ideas, tutorials, tools, and more. See you next time.